Today on Annenberg Radio News.
I was born with a hip problem, so what I've accomplished today is like a miracle.
Hear about the physical hurdles two gymnasts have overcome. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, March 27th, 2014. I'm Bryony Ng. The two-month trial that could decide the fate of teacher tenure in California came to a close today. The case has received a great deal of media attention and could hold national implications. Our Logan Healy was downtown and reports on today's closing statements.
The fight over how teachers should be graded and potentially fired has been of national interest for years. Today, lawyers in the Vergara versus California case gave their closing arguments about how they think the state's public school teachers should be hired and fired. The plaintiffs are nine public school students backed by a group founded by Silicon Valley businessman David Welch. The trial centers around five state laws on teachers. The plaintiffs say those laws make it harder to get rid of ineffective teachers. They argue that they disproportionately affects poor and minority students. Marcellus McRae represents the plaintiffs.
It's common sense that you can't have a tenure statute that forces school districts to make premature tenure decisions.
Both sides agree ineffective teachers should not be in the classroom, but teachers' unions defend the laws as critical to protecting teachers' jobs. Eric Hines is vice president of the California Teachers Association.
This trial really isn't about helping students. It's really a very thinly veiled corporate special interests that are attacking teachers and that are attacking public education and attacking our unions.
Under current laws, school administrators must decide after 2 years if a teacher will receive tenure. The plaintiffs argue 2 years is too short, and they say the laws make it difficult and expensive to get rid of what they call grossly ineffective teachers. They say those teachers get transferred to schools in undesirable locations that are mostly made up of poor and minority students. Ted Botris also represents the plaintiffs.
We have a teachers union, but we don't have a student union.
Teachers' unions say 2 years is enough time to judge a teacher's performance. They also argue seniority is the fairest way to lay teachers off during budget cuts. Joshua Pechtold is president of the California Federation of Teachers.
The protections that we have help to give us some dignity and help to create a profession. And without those, people would not stay in this profession. And you would see a revolving door of teachers coming and going in public education.
It's now up to Superior Court Judge Rolf Trehu to decide the case. A decision is expected next month, but either way it goes, an appeal is likely. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
If you've ever known the frustration of losing luggage while traveling, you may be cheering the LAPD today. After months of investigating luggage thefts at LAX, police served 25 search warrants and made multiple arrests last night. The investigation is the biggest in the airport's history. Police investigated a cargo facility near the airport. They also searched several suspects' homes throughout LA County. They recovered jewelry, electronics, and other valuables believed to be stolen. The suspects are employees of airport baggage handling companies. Women in California are still trying to catch up to men when it comes to pay. That's one conclusion in the third annual report on the status of women and girls in California. It was released this morning at Mount St. Mary's College. The school held a public forum on socioeconomic issues affecting the 19 million women living in the state and LA County. Sarah Zahedi reports.
Women in California earn 83 cents for every dollar earned by men. That might seem low, but it's actually 5 cents more than the national average. And experts at Mount St. Mary's College's Forum on the Status of Women and Girls in California stressed this is still a major problem.
We know things aren't right for the girls and the women of our state, and we know we must do something about that.
That was President Anne McElhaney Johnson of Mount St. Mary's College. She says despite the statistics, she is hopeful for the future. According to the report, wage and job inequity is a cause for greater poverty and public health issues and fewer positions of leadership in government and the media for women. Researchers also say every negative factor that affects California women as a whole hits low-income women and women with less education even harder. At Mount St. Mary's College, 95% of the student population is made up of women, and 3/4 of them are ethnic minorities. Valerie Bonilla, who works in student affairs, says the women attending Mount St. Mary's College give her hope for change.
A lot of the students that attended are the ones who are going to be making changes to improve all the data that we've heard about today.
Mayor Eric Garcetti announced via video message the city's partnership with Mount St. Mary's College to develop briefs on the data to help solve women inequity issues on the local level.
But no matter how much commitment there is behind this issue, we have to back that with the work required to truly make a difference.
Garcetti is making moves to help alleviate issues of female inequity in Los Angeles. But President Michelini Johnson says California should reach out to all public officials to make sure that changes are made all over the state. Sarah Zahedi, Annenberg Radio News.
The National Alliance of Mental Health says 64% of students who drop out of college leave for mental health reasons. As Lenza Bogali reports, community colleges now have the chance to change this statistic.
The California Mental Health Service Authority held its final forum at Los Angeles Trade Technical College today to reach a consensus on a strategic action plan that will occur between the LA Community Colleges and the LA County Mental Health Department. Mental health expert Deborah Hall says that the ultimate goal is to create more mental health services on community college campuses and attend to the mental health needs of college students.
The needs of college student mental health are very, very extreme and very crisis-ridden. There are insufficient services available on the college campuses to meet the need. If somebody has a mental health challenge, it interferes with student success. And so we have lower retention rates, lower graduation rates, higher, dropout rates, all of that.
The grant is targeted towards student veterans and members of the LGBTQ community. The suicide rate among the LGBTQ community is 4 times higher than the average college population. LGBTQ success coordinator at LA Harbor College, Chris Lane, says he can empathize.
As a gay man, I feel it's extremely important to bring awareness to LGBTQ issues on college campuses. A lot of issues they face on campus were then linked to their reasons of developing depression, isolation, anxiety.
Soldiers getting an education after coming back from overseas are another at-risk group. Veterans counselor Mike Kuambo says many suffer from PTSD and don't get the proper mental attention they need.
What we have to do is make sure that when they come back, that we have programs and services available that will deal effectively with these young men and women.
But even with these services available, many students don't seek help. Stigma remains the number one reason for students not seeking help. But Shalom Duke, Dean of Student Services at West Los Angeles College, hopes students realize they can overcome these challenges.
I tell students all the time, your disability is just one aspect of who you are, just like I'm black. I can't change it. So there's no excuses, you just have to do it.
After today's forum, they will define new plans in each of the selected Los Angeles community colleges to meet the needs of students. Lenza Bogala, Annenberg Radio News.
Jason Heath and the Greedy Souls did something generous today. They played a live set at downtown LA's Midnight Mission, which serves the homeless community of Skid Row. Jenna Pittaway was there and has this report.
Jason Heath of Jason Heath and the Greedy Souls said he was performing at the Midnight Mission because he knows firsthand about the hope that music can provide.
We play here because about 8 years ago, I got sober myself and I began volunteering down here.
Georgia Berkovich organized the event, Music with a Mission, in 2010 as a way to give sanctuary and hope to Skid Row.
Music like pain is a great equalizer. And in this room, everything's safe. People can come in off the street where it's hard and it's scary and have an hour and a half of sweetness in a really rough day. And I really believe that if people have these moments of sweetness, then they start to feel hope.
The audience was mostly homeless and appreciated the opportunity to sit down, relax, and enjoy a show. Derek usually comes to the mission for lunch. Today, he came for the music.
It's peaceful, you know what I mean? It's probably one of the few places you can be at in the downtown area and hear a band.
The event is so popular that the mission is adding a second monthly show to its schedule. Jenna Pittaway, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight it's going to be partly cloudy with temperatures in the low 60s. Tomorrow and Saturday there'll still be some clouds around with highs of around 70 degrees. We're expecting some light rain on Sunday morning before the sun returns for the end of the weekend. Later on Annenberg Radio News, hear from two social policy experts and their plan to fight poverty in California. Now we continue our series looking at the people who make Los Angeles run, the night shift workers, the minimum wage employees, and the undocumented laborers. For the second story in the series, Emmanuel Martinez takes us to Boyle Heights, where every morning men gather hoping to find work. But the work they're seeking isn't your typical day labor. It carries a different tune.
They begin showing up at the corner of Boyle Avenue and First Street in Boyle Heights around 9 a.m., waiting for a car, any car, to stop and request their services. It's three men at first, and Teodoro Cuevas is one of those. He's the one with the slick-backed hair that's thinning, the glasses that are slightly tinted, and the smile that's highlighted by a golden tooth. By mid-afternoon on a Saturday, Cuevas will be joined by dozens of others. They will swarm the plaza like bees on a honeycomb. You'd think they were day laborers if it weren't for their black slacks with metal buttons running down the sides and matching blazers, or their instruments slung across their backs. They are mariachi musicians who sing the ballads of traditional Mexican music. Like day laborers, many of these musicians are undocumented. They are just a small fraction of the more than 2 million undocumented residents in California. In Mexico, the best mariachi musicians can earn up to $1,000 a week, but here in Los Angeles, it ranges anywhere from $300 to $800. These musicians come from Mexico and end up at the mariachi plaza looking for work, because according to Cuevas, this is the spot where people come looking for them.
Bueno, la gente llega sola en este lugar porque ya saben.
People come here because it's a symbol for mariachi. It's a symbol that people know.
That doesn't mean the plaza attracts groups of people. The most difficult part is waiting around.
They don't come every day. It could be one day, a week, or it could be none.
Having work also means having food on the table.
I'm able to buy meat when there's lots of work.
And when there isn't, Cuevas resorts to eating tortillas with just cheese and chili. Some musicians compensate by looking for work at bars and restaurants. Cuevas isn't one of those.
I can't do that because it requires a lot of walking around.
Cuevas is in his upper 60s. He's a retired factory worker and walks around with a noticeable limp. He comes to the plaza with a few other musicians. Some play cards on a golden statue of Lucha Reyes, the first female superstar of the genre. Others hang out by the kiosk. It was donated by the Mexican state of Jalisco. And murals of mariachis dressed in their charro garb adorn the walls of two Mexican eateries, which many musicians walk in and out of throughout the day. Cuevas, however, likes to sit under the same tree, the one that's closest to the intersection of Boyle and First. It is here where he strums his guitarrón, the instrument that's the size of a cello, but played like a guitar. When he doesn't lug his guitarrón to the plaza, he brings his viruela. It's smaller and lighter and has a higher pitch. He plays two of the most important instruments in the band. This gives Cuevas an advantage when looking for work.
If
it isn't one instrument, it's another. If someone plays the same instrument when we're scrambling around to put a band together, I could just play another.
Cuevas does get plenty of opportunities to play. Usually it's Las Mañanitas, a Spanish birthday song made famous by Vicente Fernandez. This version of the song was sung at a small birthday party in Compton. He was on guitarrón that night. When it's not a birthday party, it's a wedding, or a quinceañera, or a baptism. He has even played at the cemetery. Cuevas waits for these occasions to pop up every Monday through Friday, from 9 in the morning till about noon. On weekends, he's there longer. And some weeks, they're there in bunches, and other weeks, they're nowhere to be found. Manuel Martinez, Edinburgh Radio News.
Hundreds of city employees volunteered across Los Angeles today in honor of Cesar Chavez Week. It honors the March 31st birthday of the union activist. Ella Bernal reports from the LA Regional Food Bank.
Phyllis Calloway normally works behind a desk at the Los Angeles Department of Public Social Services. But today, she was in a t-shirt and jeans at the LA Regional Food Bank.
I love giving back, and it's always a nice challenge to plus meet the people who want to do the same thing.
Calloway is one of 50 employees who took the day off work to honor Cesar Chavez. She spent her entire morning on the sides of a long conveyor belt, sorting hundreds of food items into boxes. Susan Acker is with the food bank.
They've been sorting produce, they've been sorting shelf-stable food. It helps us a lot because we distribute about 1 million pounds of food out of our warehouse every week, so we need a lot of volunteers.
Cesar Chavez was an American farm worker and civil rights activist who started the United Farm Workers Union 52 years ago. Even after his death, the organization is still heavily involved in issues like immigration reform and advocating for social integrity and respect. The food bank was just one of several places where Los Angeles employees volunteered this week. Other locations included the YMCA, Animal Care and Control, and the California Veterans Home. This is the fourth year the city has partnered with the LA Food Bank. Ella Bernal, Annenberg Radio News.
A film about Cesar Chavez hits theaters everywhere tomorrow. JJ Maldonado finds out how the film portrays the activist and his work.
The biopic chronicles Chavez's fight and struggles for farm workers during the 60s.
I come here out of respect for one of the heroic figures of our time, Cesar Chavez.
President of the United Farm Workers, Arturo Rodriguez, praises the film and its portrayal of Chavez.
I think that the director, Diego Luna, did an excellent job at portraying the plight of farm workers back then in 1960. Certainly, he showed the sacrifices that were being made by workers then, the joining together and the coming together, I should say, of Filipino workers and Mexican workers to be able to create and develop the organization that we have today.
Some critics say it lacks accurate portrayal of Filipino farm workers. Bino Realullo, a Filipino community organizer and educator, says in his Huffington Post blog, Filipinos are once again denied the proper recognition they deserved. Chavez's strikes and boycotts led to the passage of the California Agricultural Labor Relations Act in 1975. The act protects the rights of farm workers to unionize. The film portrays Chavez's political efforts, but Rodriguez says it also chronicles Chavez's personal life.
I thought they did, you know, very, very good in terms of talking about Caesar as well, and that they showed, you know, that there was a lot of personal sacrifices Caesar made that was very difficult both for him and for his family. It talked about the really deep beliefs that he had in nonviolence.
Chavez passed away at the age of 66 in 1993. This is the first Hollywood film about his life. JJ Maldonado, Annenberg Radio News.
In California, one in four people live in poverty, the highest rate of any state in the country. For the next 2 days, social policy experts at USC are looking at which programs have been working to reduce poverty and which haven't. I grabbed a few minutes today with USC professors Raphael Bostic and Richard Parks. So, Raphael and Richard, can you tell me what the conference is about today?
Well, the conference is about innovating to end urban poverty, trying to find solutions, new solutions, to end urban poverty in our country.
Why is it happening in Los Angeles in California?
Well, Los Angeles County actually has the highest poverty rate at 27% of California, and California has the highest poverty rate in the country, so it's appropriate that we're here.
And who have you brought together today? I understand that there's a wide collection of people from across the country. Can you tell me a bit more about them and why you've selected these particular people?
So when we were thinking about the conference, what we wanted to do was make sure that the solutions that we were lifting up actually covered the full range of causes of poverty or issues. So we needed to get experts from a wide range of areas, so education, job training, housing, place-based policies, how do we deal with youth and the incarcerated populations. And so we had to look wherever the experts were. So some of them were in Washington, some of them were in Washington State, some of them were in the middle of Texas, believe it or not. And so we really had as our priority getting the best people here to speak on these issues, because it's a problem that we've seen for a while, and a lot of people have recognized that it's going to require all of our efforts to innovate, to come together, and to make sure we're pointing in the same direction.
What do you hope that the conference will achieve by bringing all these people together and having these types of discussions?
I think that we will achieve at least two things. The first is really a list of solutions or innovative approaches that we can lift up as having a potential to make a real difference. And then the second is to try to get people to view the problem of poverty in a more holistic way, and not just in their area. So by bringing people from all these fields together and making them sit in a room for a day and a half together, it's my hope that it'll lead to conversation between people who haven't spoken together before and some learning that happens across fields, so that the innovation actually diffuses even further than what we're hoping just from our efforts.
That was Raphael Bostic, Professor and Director of the USC Bedrosian Center on Governance, and Richard Parks, Executive Director of the Sol Price Center for Social Innovation. Now a story about two women with a passion for rhythmic gymnastics.
I'm Elizabeth Trosian, and I'm a gymnast at Los Angeles School of Gymnastics.
I'm Isabel Connor, and I'm a rhythmic gymnast at Los Angeles School of Gymnastics. I love rhythmic because it's more graceful than artistic, and it gives you less injuries usually. Last year, I fractured both of my fifth metatarsals.
It was state competition, and right before I went on, I tore my ligament in my foot, and my muscles tore in my calves. And I was crying the entire time. My coach was just like, suck it up, who cares? You can worry about the pain after the competition. I was born with a hip problem, so what I've accomplished today is like a miracle. I'm proud of it, but I need to go more.
I go to school and we have a lot of homework, so it's really difficult. A lot of times I'm up for at least 4 hours.
My eighth grade class trip to New York, I didn't get to go. We made like a special trip just for me to Universal Studios, and I had to leave early. I stayed for 2 hours and I had to come back to practice.
In my hoop routine, I made a toss, and it was a bad toss, so I ran after it, and I tripped and fell, and you just hear the whole audience go, aww.
The future is the 2016 Senior Olympic Games. I represent Armenia, so I have a chance to make it.
Newspaper is in trouble. That's not news. But there's an angle you may not have thought about with this changing media landscape, the comics page. Stripped is a documentary about the comic strip industry that premiered last night in Hollywood. Angie Fiedler-Sutton has more on this film.
A young girl goes outside and gets the Sunday paper and brings it into the kitchen. She ignores most of it, her hands grabbing the colorful section of the comics, and begins to read. So starts Stripped, a documentary detailing the world of comic strips, incorporating the first ever audio interview with Bill Watterson, creator of Calvin and Hobbes.
In the right hands, a comic strip attains a beauty and an elegance that really I'd put against any other art.
For many of these comic creators, it was reading those Sunday morning comics that led them down the path to being cartoonists themselves. Written and directed by Frederick Schroeder and Dave Kellett, Stripped launches itself into the world of comic strips by first giving a quick history, detailing how comic strip artists were considered celebrities in the 30s and 40s, and explaining how syndication works.
Mr. Spokesman, you mean the newspapers are paying me for my funny pictures?
The movie, which was funded in part via Kickstarter, then goes into the creative process. It shows people like Bill Keane of Family Circus and Mort Walker of Beetle Bailey draw, and even has some archival footage of Charles Schultz at his table. But as with any medium in today's world, the internet has changed the landscape. Newspapers closing left and right means that there are less places that the syndicate can go for selling comic strips, which means that there are less chances for new work to break in.
It's a little scary for us because we're cartoonists. You know, we're not financiers and we're not entrepreneurs generally.
So says Greg Evans, creator of the comic strip Luann. But cartoonists today, if they want to survive, have to be more than just artists. A sequence shot as if it's an 8-bit video game goes into the world of how webcomics work and is both entertaining and educational. Anyone interested in making money in the digital world should watch this segment at least.
Cartoonists need so badly.
While the internet has made syndication even harder to break into, the very nature of it has also led to a new avenue of creativity.
If anything, I feel like we're in a rebirth of comics right now.
That quote is from Matt Inman, creator of the webcomic The Oatmeal. The documentary goes on to talk about the webcomic world, something dear to co-writer and director Dave Kellett's heart, as he himself is a webcomic artist. It brings up the point that the internet has the plus of, quote, the infinite canvas of the screen, and has given a home to comics that syndication outlets would never even consider. But it also brings up the negative of how much work an artist has to do to keep the money rolling in. Both sides are represented, from Evans talking about how little money you can make online, to the guys behind Penny Arcade comparing the complaints about the internet to what happened when the automobile was invented.
This is how people consume things. They don't read newspapers anymore.
The documentary is fun, fascinating, and enlightening. The range of interview subjects is wide, and everyone has something worth hearing. If you are an artist or just love comic strips, this is well worth the watch. Running at 85 minutes long, it feels way too short and could easily have been turned into a Ken Burns-style series. Because, as the end song indicates, pictures have been telling stories for a long, long time.
Pictures have been telling stories for a long, long time.
Angie Fiedler-Sutton, Annenberg Radio News.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City!
The U-Go Club is a go club in Old Town Pasadena in a some kind of office building. The room is flat, kind of vanilla color. Clock ticks really loud. It's very quiet. Mm-hmm. Go is ancient Chinese abstract strategy game. In Chinese, it's called Wei Chi. Korean, it's called Baduk. And in Japanese, it's Go. It's just a bunch of lonely dudes that like to play Go together.
Sonic City!
Now we check in with Camille Requiestas to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Camille.
Hi, Bryony. Up next on ATVN, the state senator Leland Yee withdrew his candidacy today for California Secretary of State. We have reaction from his campaign and the opposition. And first Twitter, now YouTube, what the Turkish government is doing to censor its citizens. Plus, eyes are on Apple after celebrities criticized the company on its emojis. We'll tell you why race was a factor in this iconic issue. Tune into ATVN on channel 8.1 at 6.
That's it for this Thursday. Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment, and the newscast producer is Victor Figueroa. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Bryony Ng.